Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 15 of Tim's Travails, the amazing podcast and video series with IP attorney and author Timothy Trainer. He has written 7 books, including 2, and he's on his 3rd novel about China, which they're fantastic. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of the show on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. You can also find our podcasts on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can find all of this information on timothytrainer.com. Every month, we feature a new episode. For this show, though, we talk about all kinds of topics. And today, Elaine Church of the Semester at Sea program is our guest. Just a quick intro. Elaine is a former principal of PricewaterhouseCoopers, LLP. She spent her 27-year career working on tax quality and risk management, as well as tax policy and compliance issues. Before retiring, though, her travel interests merged with her involvement, and she began working on the Semester at Sea program. With multiple trips and continued interest in education, Elaine's involvement with the Semester at Sea program includes service on the Alumni Association Advisory Committee and the Alumni Association Board of Directors. You are going to love this interview with Elaine Church and Timothy Trainer. Take it away, Tim.
Thank you, Hope. And good to see you today. And also glad to have Elaine Church on today as our guest. And we're going to talk about something rather interesting and different for many people, I think, today. Elaine is here to talk about something she's been enjoying kind of as she moved from her work life to retirement, where she had much more time to do a little bit of that travel. And it's the kind of travel that maybe a lot of us are not very much aware of. We were just chatting. Elaine was a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, where she worked for many years. But we're going to really focus on Semester at Sea. And this, for those of you who may be listening and you've cruised, this is a little bit of a different slant to cruising, right, Elaine?
Absolutely.
And yeah.
I mean, this is an opportunity. It's actually a floating university. So they sail every spring and fall for a full semester with a group of students, usually 500 or so. And then they invite faculty, staff, and a category of passenger they call lifelong learners to join them. Yeah. And I've always sailed as a lifelong learner.
Ah, well, let me go back and say, I never really thought about it very much. I first heard about Semester at Sea, I guess maybe my first semester as a graduate student. And at that particular time at the University of Pittsburgh, they were actually very involved in the Semester at Sea. And one of my professors had actually just finished a semester. And that's when I first heard of it. But then I never gave it any more thought after that. But now you're much more involved in Semester at Sea. And how did you first learn about Semester at Sea or get involved in Semester at Sea?
Funnily enough, I walked into a bar story. I was actually visiting Shanghai, where, because that was the 1996 era when that was still a hardship posting, the local partner in charge, who was a US expat, had rewarded me for carrying a case of Doritos for his children. So he took me to the famous Peace Bar, and in walked still another retired partner who was then sailing around the world on Semester at Sea. That was my first intro to the program. I made notes. Like you, I could neither afford nor get away from work in time to do it at that point. And it took me until 2012 till I could take my first mini voyage, which was a 6-week Maymaster on Semester at Sea. And then since then, I've sailed 4 times.
Oh, now, did you, on that very first one, did you, you said it wasn't the full semester. You were there for a partial portion of the semester.
Yes, at that time, we were actually offering summer voyages and what they called enrichment voyages. Now we are focused really on just the 2 spring and fall voyages with our current ship. And for a lifelong learner, you can sail either the entire, typically 105, 110-day voyage for the semester, Or they often offer what they call spotlight voyages, which
Yeah.
are roughly a third of the voyage, depending upon the way the ports, line up. But it's important to note that, while the initial group of lifelong learners was predominantly retirees, that's no longer the case. There are a lot of our students who come back mid-career because they want to do it again, or they want to do it again with their partner. Or we're finding, in some cases, executives on sabbatical want to take their family, including their children, and expose them to the world. And this is a fabulous way to do that.
And what do you think the ratio usually is between students and what you're referring to as lifelong learners?
We usually sail with about 550 students and 30 to 50 lifelong learners. And then, obviously, in addition to that, we have faculty spouses who participate with the lifelong learners in a lot of activities.
And one of the things is, of course, the semester C is also associated with a specific university, correct?
That's correct. Because we want to ensure that the students who are taking classes on board can get credit, we have partnered with a variety of universities over time, from Chapman University to Pittsburgh, which you remember, to UVA, which was the one I first sailed with, to CSU, which is our current partner, and we're moving to USD in 2028 or
Now
20,
that's
2018. No, 2028, sorry.
20. So University of San Diego.
Yes,
Okay.
they've been a strong supporter of the program for years and years, and typically there may be 50 or so students from
Okay.
USD that sail each voyage. So.
And probably just so other people who are hearing this, watching, understand that, for example, the students themselves don't have to be from that specific school to get the credits, right?
No, absolutely. In fact, we try to get a very a wide group of students. So a number from all US universities as well as from foreign universities, because this is an international experience and we really want it to be diverse, not only in the countries that we visit, but also the professors and the students that participate in the program.
Oh, well, that brings up another question then. Given that there are classes and these are students still going to class and getting credits during the semester, are the faculty members from diverse universities as well, like the students?
Absolutely. In fact, there is a rule that no more than five faculty members of any voyage can be from our university partner because we want to keep it open and encourage faculty from around the world to apply. And all the faculty have to be with PhDs in their chosen field. So the quality of the education is superb.
I guess given the kind of travel and everything going on, I guess one thing I find interesting is, would this be more the coursework, shall we say? Is it as broad as one would find if you are on land taking a regular conventional course, or is it more geared toward, let's say, history, liberal arts kinds of studies, or just how's that the array of classes?
Issues. And one, the coursework is as rigorous as that in the university. And the credits are originally granted by our partner university and transferable to the student's home university. I always think of it for the students as a semester without a weekend because the time is split half at sea and half at port. And at sea, when you're in sea, you're in class, and there's a very demanding schedule of classes and programs and papers and all the normal things that you would have. And then when you're in port, no one's going to sleep away a weekend because you want to explore another country. So it's quite challenging. The mix of courses is, varies from semester to semester. There are business courses, there are art courses, history courses, no language courses usually, because we're going to so many countries. But a wide variety and very interesting courses. And then in addition, everyone on the ship, including all of the faculty and the LLLs, are invited in to participate with the students in a program that's called Global Studies, which is mandatory for the students, and it anchors them into the overall thrust of the journey, introducing them to the ports and the countries, social impacts, things like the UN sustainable goals, those kinds of things, which gives coherence to the program as a whole.
And given the fact that it's a semester, so we're talking over 100 days, but at the same time, you're staying in a particular country for several days. Does each semester focus on a particular region?
No, we typically sail at the moment in Asia and Europe because the ship we are using currently is used in the summer as a tour ship in the Baltic. So
Oh.
we have to start sort of from somewhere near Bremerhaven, and then we'll end up in Asia, and then the spring semester will reverse that.
Okay.
So it but what we it's very different from a normal cruise ship because we don't go into a port for 24 hours or
Right.
What we do is we picked roughly 10 ports and we stay there from 4 to 6 days. So, because the idea is to actually immerse the students in the culture, learn about the country, participate, explore a
Yeah.
variety of ways.
So that raises for me another question because, as you say, people that go on a regular cruise, you go into port, let's say at 8 in the morning, and the ship leaves by 10 o'clock at night. Given whatever you want to do, you might have 12 hours on land, maybe less. But here, I guess, are there opportunities for the students to do? Once you get to a port, you're staying for 4 to 6 days to go off and be somewhere overnight and get farther inland in some of these countries.
Absolutely, and in two ways. First, they can do independent travel, although they're not permitted to leave the country in which the ship docked. Or they can do any one of a number of semester at sea excursions. And the semester at sea excursions vary from, the touristic experience. Let's go
Yeah.
see the Taj Mahal, right? To impact studies. For example, in Ghana, there is an SSS alum who's founded a school in Ghana. And so the students can go to that school and actually stay overnight and participate with the school. In Belize, one time, I did an impact journey and I went to the Belize Zoo that had been struck by a hurricane. And I got to spend some time, quality time with the students, painting and rebuilding cages for the animals. And there was a reward for that at the end was the zoo allowed us to pet the jaguar, which sounds more intimidating than it was, because essentially this was a rescue jaguar that had been in the zoo since birth. And we were in the cage inside his enclosure. And so
Oh.
he could wander around the cage and we could pet him. And the trainer had him doing somersaults and that kind of nonsense. But the funniest thing that I have video of is this occurred right after we had experienced crossing the equator and the Neptune ceremonies. On the ship, a number of the students at the Neptune Day shave their heads and donate their hair to Locks of Love. And so the trainer told those students who had shaved heads to stand up in the cage. Now, we'd been painting for hours and we were sweaty and miserable. The jaguar came on top of the cage and licked their heads because they were salty. Now, how many people can say they had their head licked by a jaguar?
Well,
Right?
it certainly allows for some interesting experiences. And so, how is the interaction between the lifelong learners and the 500 and so college age students that you have on board?
It's actually really invigorating as a lifelong learner to sail with the students and watch them grow and mature. You can involve yourself as much or as little as you want. First of all, you take classes on a space available basis, and I've never had a problem taking any of the classes I wanted. The commitment as a lifelong learner, good news, you don't have to write the papers or take the exam. But they do expect you to kind of do the reading and stay up on the course materials, which is fun. And as importantly, each professor is obligated at some point in the voyage to take his class on a trip that is related to the class in one of the ports. And the lifelong learners in that class are also invited to participate. So, I mean, one of the most meaningful I remember was I was taking a class on world literature, and the professor, who's a very good friend, was taking literature from every country. And we hit Trinidad, and he was celebrating the Indian author V.S. Naipaul, who lived in Trinidad, and the strong Indian culture in Trinidad. So we spent the day first visiting his home and those environs and a couple of Hindu temples, one of which was the Temple of the Sea. And we arrived in the middle of a Diva Diwali ceremony, and the celebrant rather, just stopped the whole celebration and invited us in and then explained everything that was going on, which was just really amazing. So it was, yeah, there's, you just get to do such interesting things.
Yeah, well, obviously, you've done this type of sailing, but you've also done the more traditional cruise sailing. But I would guess that there are certain unique things that happen on these kinds of sailings, because in some ways you're throwing yourself back into the lifestyle of not completely as a student, but you can go back to that yourself if you want to, and like you say, the extent to which you want to do that is up to you, I guess.
Right. But I
And
mean, they offer experiences you couldn't find anywhere
yeah.
else. I mean, for example, when I sailed through the Panama Canal in 2012, one of the Interport lecturers was the engineer who was in charge of building the second bore on the canal. And what he did when we hit Panama City was he led a field trip of all the engineering students,
Oh, okay.
hard hat behind the scenes to see the bore under construction. Again,
Yeah.
how do you replicate that experience?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's one thing to just be going through the canal, and yes, you see the ships rising or getting lower based on, the water levels as you go through the di different locks. That's one thing, and somebody's, yes, they're explaining it, but everybody's still staying on the ship. Nobody's getting off the ship and doing anything, because you're still traversing the canal. You're going from one end to the other, so it's a completely different kind of experience if you're able to get off and actually get behind the scenes, as you say, and you're going to spend some more time there. Whereas for a more traditional, conventional cruise, you're just getting from one end to the other, so you can continue on with your cruise.
Right.
And there isn't this educational aspect to it. So if, from that perspective, it's a little bit different as well. I mean, what about, and I'm asking this because I know you've sailed on other kinds of cruises as well, but what about when somebody's used to that traditional type of cruising, what are the amenities that you don't necessarily get, or that maybe that you've gotten accustomed to?
Well, it's not Silver Sea, and you don't have a butler and a bar in your room. That's true. However, the lifelong learners do have access to a bar from which the students are excluded, of course. And so that's a nice place to hang out. There are several dining rooms on the ship, as well as one private restaurant and a couple of pool bar type places. And in the adult bar, you can also order, pizzas and sandwiches and salads and that kind of stuff. So it's really quite comfortable. And I mean, again, we're not talking luxury, Silver Sea, but you are not suffering either.
So is it harder to get the shorter segments of the semester if somebody isn't able to do 100 days? Because, obviously there are a lot of people that, one, they're questioning whether they should be on a ship for that long to begin with. They're not sure if they can really get used to being on a ship that long. So for some people, maybe they go, okay, I'm willing to try it for half of that semester, or even just a third of that semester. I mean, is it di a difficult thing to do?
No, each semester we have what we call, the spotlight voyages, and they vary because obviously you've got to figure out where you're gonna, what works with the itinerary of the ship and the port that you're visiting. But for example, I was considering one this fall that was 40 days from Salvador de Bahia in Brazil through St. Helena, Cape Town, Mauritius, and ending in Sri Lanka. That was one voyage of 40 days. It was a spotlight voyage, which was pretty effective.
That's, well, actually, it hits some interesting parts of the world, and but also avoids certain parts of the world that you don't want to be close to. I think that becomes, I think of as another issue sometimes, is, but
Well, we plan that
yeah.
every voyage. I mean, obviously, there are places we no longer go to, St. Petersburg, or I was doing some research for the council, and in our 1963 voyage, we spent quite a bit of time in Beirut. Well, guess what?
You
That's
can't.
not happening anymore. Sailing through the Red Sea isn't happening anymore. But when in planning every voyage, we also plan in what we call diversionary ports. So we have a backup plan already in place if if trouble erupts. And it has changed over the course of the time that this program has been in existence. You know, in the earlier days, they actually had pirate watch, and students stood pirate watch through many areas. By the time I sailed in 2014, we weren't worried so much about pirates, but we were part of the search effort for the downed Malaysian aircraft,
Oh,
and so we had
yes.
people on, you know, debris watch looking
Yes.
for evidence of that. You know, so it varies from time to time.
Yeah. Well, let me, and since you are on the advisory council, alumni advisory council, what are the kinds of things that the council does for? Is it really geared toward just looking at it from the lifelong learner's perspective or in general?
Oh, no, in general, what we're trying to do is, and the council has changed over the years as well. And so this is a relatively new formulation of what used to be an alumni advisory board that was sorted lifelong learners versus young alumni versus parents, et cetera. But now we're trying to do an integrated alumni approach, and we've rolled out and are trying to increase the facility of a new alumni database, so that it is very easy for alumni of every generation to get together, to contact each other through this database, to find out about events in their area. When I mean, we have chapters all over the country, and there are frequent reunions, there are, you know, fundraising events, there are just social events, you know, whether it's a ball game or a bar or, you know, just a get together, that just encourages people to keep the voyage going after they step off the ship, which is really important because the you know, like any other exempt organization, contributions are important, and we want the alumni to stay involved, but to feel that they're getting value for staying involved. And we always like it when some of our students come back and sail again, sometimes as staff or resident directors, or sometimes 20 years later, bringing back their spouse or significant other. Or in some cases, we have families that parents have sailed, children have sailed, and now we're into grandchildren who are sailing. And it's just a family tradition.
Well, and what is the actual role of the university that's really behind, you know, these semesters for a given period of time? I
The
mean,
university is responsible for ensuring the academic quality. So they're going to help appoint the academic dean, work to identify the professors who will sail on that voyage, review their curricula. And because they're actually going to give it credit for that course, the curricula and the faculty have to meet the same standards that would apply if the course were being taught on land. So, for example, the courses we offer now, they're part of the CSU catalog. Some of the CSU catalog is offered in Fort Collins, and some is offered on the ship. But there's no difference in the quality or the rigor of the educational requirements.
Well, yeah, I was just thinking that, for example, if you've got to do research papers, write papers, and you have to look up things and do the research itself, back in the day when you didn't have the internet. I'm not sure how that all of that would have happened, but because you're not going to have a library on the ship, whereas
Well,
today
we
you
do have a
can.
library on the ship, although it's less robust because of the internet than it used to be in the 60s, right?
So yeah, it's a lot easier if, as long as you're sailing in places where you have good connections, and the ship itself has to have the infrastructure for the good connection, right? It's
Well, it does, and we use Starlink, and you know, we have access to major newspapers, to the library of CSU, for example, is open to the students, and then there's a number of other sites that we just sponsor without any charge to the students, so that they can do their work and their coursework very easily. And most of the professors are very good at using the systems on board to have electronic versions of the materials to supplement any textual materials that they have, so that it's easy for the students to access that data.
No, that just comes to mind. I mean, just on regular cruising, you know, different ships, different quality of connectivity can exist. So it just it, yeah it can still differ. Now the other thing I'm curious about, though, is among the students, are we talking about usually juniors, seniors, and graduate students? I'm guessing it wouldn't be freshmen and sophomore students for the most part.
It's typically undergrads, very frequently juniors or seniors. But several years ago, we did expand the program to allow gap year students as well. And we have classes geared to gap year students in addition. But obviously, it's someone who knows what their major is and they know what courses they need to focus on and wants to add the global community, that global experience to their resume.
Well, this is a question. I don't know if this is one of those things that you look at, but if for somebody who's curious, I mean, what is the, let's say, the range of a semester at sea for a student? I mean, what's the expense? Is it the same as go? It's got to be more than a regular semester, on Fort Collins, for example. I would guess a semester at sea is going to be a little bit bigger out of pocket expense, to do that semester. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, well, I always focus on it as the delta. And for our American students, the delta over the cost they would have in a regular semester, once they're incurring both tuition and dorm fees, is really pretty close to what they're going to spend to semester, number one. But number two, we have robust scholarship funds, and I would say probably half of the students on board have some form of scholarship or work study component to help reduce their costs, make it more manageable. That becomes even more problematic when you're talking about an international student, because some of those students, the delta is the entire cost because they're entitled to free education at home. And so there we have to expend more scholarship funds to make that happen. It's very important to the quality of the program that we have some international students in the mix. So, and sometimes we get international students who are already in school in the US, so they're used to the concept of expenditure. So again, the delta shrinks. So
So the other part of this is, given that you're going to various countries that during the semester, I guess the university, or is it the student or lifelong learner dealing with whatever visas that might be necessary to actually enter the countries?
well, the program advises you what visas you need, but it is the student's responsibility to generally secure those visas. I mean, there were some exceptions. When we landed in Ho Chi Minh City, I took an excursion over to see the temples at Angkor Wat, and there we literally got a group visa as we landed in Cambodia. But that was unusual. I mean, for most of the countries, you have to make sure you have your visas.
I mean, there are a lot of different mechanical aspects to this. I think that is, first of all, it is still international travel, and
Absolutely.
that's fundamentally those that's the one thing, whether you're a student or a lifelong learner, you have to understand that, yes, it's part of this semester at sea, but at the same time, it's still international travel, and you still have those kinds of things that you have to think about. Oh, and the other thing is possibility of, depending on where you're going, are there any vaccine or inoculations you might want to get before you go? Because depending on the country you're going to, you don't, and you're going to be there for several days. If you do on land excursions and you're going to go somewhere inland overnight, you want to be thinking about, well, am I protected against something?
And again, Semester at Sea provides a lot of advice. For example, for the current, for the fall 26 voyage, they recommended not only the normal range of vaccines and COVID vaccines, but also yellow fever vaccines, a Japanese
Encephalitis.
encephalitis vaccine, and several others that are unique to the areas that you're visiting. Because you clearly, I mean, the ship is equipped with a full medical facility, and we carry a certain number of vaccines and medicines and that kind of thing. But obviously, we prefer that the students be vaccinated. We don't want to be dealing with rabies or what have you, on if we don't have to, right?
So again, it's really a lot of for anybody, whether you're an adult, whether you're a college student thinking about doing something like this, these are the things you have to start preparing prior to going, because it's much, to me, it's a lot more difficult once you're on the voyage to start trying to deal with these things. You gotta line it up and
We ensure that it's all lined up before we let them on board because we don't want to be dealing with it otherwise. I mean, it's always interesting because the students are a mix. Some are experienced travelers, others have never been out of Des Moines, Iowa, so It's interesting to watch them mature and grow over the course of the voyage. You'll get I've been on voyages where some of my ship daughters, and I'll explain that in a minute, didn't want to be more than 10 feet from an SAS adult on their first port because they just were very uncomfortable, and then got much more comfortable during the course of the voyage. It's interesting to me, if someone had offered me the ability to travel when I was in college, I'm not sure I would have been concerned about being in daily contact with my parents. But sometimes students today are just so used to being in contact that they want adult guidance, if you will. And so one of the things that Semester at Sea encourages is for all the adults, lifelong learners, faculty, staff, to sponsor what we call an extended family. And just a way to get together. So normally I would have anywhere from 7 to 10 ship children, and we would meet before each port, after each port, compare notes. It's not an economic commitment on my part. It's a time commitment to make sure that they have someone that they know if they get into trouble, if they have a problem, if they're worried about something, they can chat. And yeah, I can sponsor a pizza party or an ice cream sundae party or something like that. But the important thing is to spend the time with them, so that they are comfortable and they have an adult. And indeed, I mean, many of my ship children have stayed in contact, and several have even visited since I returned. So.
I think you're probably right. I mean, for me, it's like, yeah, so what if I don't see my parents for a week or 10 days or not in contact at all in any way? I don't think it would have bothered me back.
Well, but your baseline is different then,
Yeah,
right?
exactly.
Because that wasn't the norm.
So it is a little mental adjustment that you might have to make for something like that. But it is interesting. It's a whole, well, I think it's in some ways there are parallels to if you're just on a regular cruise ship. Let's say if you're fortunate enough to be able to cruise for 3 weeks or 6 weeks on just a regular cruise ship, you get to know certain people. And like you're saying about having ship children, well, you end up on a cruise, if you're on for any length of time, a group of people that you tend to regularly get together with, whether it's for meals, whether it's for drinks, whether it's just agreeing to, oh, let's go do X on land together. So it's no different in that sense. It's just here you're doing it with college age students, even though you may be so many, a decade or more, a generation older, but it's still the same concept, just a
Oh,
little bit different.
absolutely. And you get close. I mean, you mingle. You mingle in the classes. You mingle on the excursions. You mingle in the extended families. And in addition, I mean, it's like any other college dorm, bottom up, not top down. But every voyage spawns a variety of clubs and activities, whether it's an LGBTQ club, or whether it's a yoga advance every morning on the deck, theater groups. There's so much, and you can participate again in any or all of that as you want as a lifelong learner. You also find that, or I have found that many times the professors will ask the lifelong learners to get involved in their classes, to be judges, if you will, if there's a class competition in terms of papers, or to be mentors if there's, someone in your area of expertise that wants guidance on terms of career. Guidance. There's usually a writing lab on board, and you help people with resumes. I mean, there's just so much of that. So you're getting involved in a lot of ways.
And I well, are the students basically paired up in a cabin, like two, three to a cabin or something like that?
The cabins, some of them are 2 to a cabin, some 3 to a cabin. And when you talk about planning, the other thing that's interesting is, again, in this day of social media, many of the students meet their roommates, remotely before they get on board. And some of them have already planned excursions or trips. Or I just met a student who just got off the ship, and she said, "Well, what I did was I went to, Thailand, and I didn't know anybody in Thailand, so I went on to the website and I found 5 people, and we rented a place, and that's where we started, and that's how I met." And then we had someone, if we're wandering around Thailand before we got on the ship, that I was not alone. It made my parents a lot more comfortable.
No, you're right. I mean, there's so many ways that traveling is different because you do have the internet. There are lots of things you can do prior to arrival at some places and make arrangements to do these kinds of things. And like this, you can actually meet people face to face before you're actually physically together. So
Exactly.
it really reduces any kind of anxiety, let's say, sometimes going to a new place, seeing, meeting new people, stuff like that. So it definitely helps to have all these tools available.
Well, and you form friend just as on the cruise ships as you've done, you form friendships that last for years. I mean, one person I met on 2014 is a really good friend. He lives in Wellington. I went to New Zealand, and he spent 5 weeks. We tootled around the country, exploring the country. And so it's just great to have that kind of connectivity.
Yeah, no, that's great. What maybe there's well, obviously there are lots of things we haven't covered, but I'm just trying to think of if there was one or two things that really stand out that maybe we haven't touched upon about semester at sea that, both from a parent's perspective and a student's perspective, what would you say maybe we haven't touched upon that's valuable to know about or understand?
Well, I just think it's important to underscore that this is really an educational program, and it's an enrichment program. It's not unlike any other. If you go to semester abroad, you stay in one country, and if you're in Europe, maybe you'll travel around, but you're not going to get the intense exposure to the different cultures that you do on semester at sea. You're not going to have the experiences, whether it's going behind the scenes at the canal or meeting with government officials in Rabat, which I did one voyage, or meeting with an NGO, or when I was in Senegal, which is not a very common US tourist destination. Touring the old town, visiting the mosque, and actually having a tour of the mosque by a member of the sect that maintains the mosque to explain that. Having the opportunity to afterwards have lunch in his home and then visit a village to meet and interact with the Senegalese people and their children. That's the kind of thing you don't get on a small cruise ship.
As you were saying that, the one thing I just dawns on me as I think about it is, we've jetted across from country to or a continent to continent sometimes. And of course, you can be, well, we're on the East Coast. You can be in Europe in 7, 8 hours. Or you can take a direct flight here from Washington and be in Tokyo in about 14. I mean, actual flying time.
Right.
And you think, well, the world's a small place. But then you get on a ship. And you start crossing an ocean or a sea, and all of a sudden, the concept of how small the world can be or things being close together is completely different when you're at sea because sometimes you see nothing but water for days. And it gives you a completely different perspective when you do it by ship.
Well, it's a magical experience to be in the middle of the ocean, watching the sunrise, watching the sunset, and looking for the elusive green flash, which I've actually seen two or three
Oh,
times.
bye. Yeah.
Is something that, again, can't be replicated.
Right.
On one of my voyages, we were even more fortunate because one of the professors, Ian Campbell, was an astronomy professor, and we actually would lay on the deck, the top deck, at night, and he would point out the Southern Cross and all of the constellations. And I mean, talk about an experience you can't replicate. No light pollution, no pollution. And you could just really experience the stars as our ancestors must have when they sailed these seas, which we can no longer do in our homes, right?
No, that's absolutely true. It's but and they're different, just different ways you see things from the ship. I mean, there's no time for that or capability of doing any of those things when you're on an airplane. So this is a completely different experience to be at sea.
Well,
And
you're a sailor. You sailed, so the difference of flying into Cape Town or Stockholm versus sailing
stealing
into
it,
those
yes.
cities. They're just, I mean, when you fly into Cape Town or Stockholm, you're flying into a busy airport. You're surrounded by big buildings. When you sail into Stockholm, you're going across the Baltic through this beautiful archipelago that goes on forever and ever. When you sail into Cape Town, you've got beautiful view of tabletop, and sometimes tabletop has a tablecloth because the clouds come down. But
Absolutely.
it's a view you don't get elsewhere.
Well, I know that we've sailed into Cape Town a number of times, and as you say, the view of Lion's Head and Table Mountain behind the city itself It doesn't really matter how many times you do it. It's always something you want to see. And it's the same thing if you're sailing into Hong Kong or anywhere else. I think some of these cities you just can't really. I mean, it's so different than an airport, right? Just flying in, you just boom, you're on land. But here, it takes time to sail into any city and get docked at the port. So you've got all that time to just enjoy it as you approach a new destination, and that's the
Typically, the ship
different part.
community, and typically the ship community on Semester at Sea is involved, coming up to, watch the sail in. And in many countries where we come in, they actually greet us with a band or a dance or something like that to
Yeah.
welcome us, because there are ports where we visit it regularly, and that gives a nice touch too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we've seen that both entering a port and also leaving a port where something may be going on. So all these are experiences that are unique experiences. It doesn't really ma matter sometimes how many times you've gone to the same destination, but it's always special.
Well, there's always something new to see,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think that hopefully, if people have questions or something afterwards and they're curious or more interested, is there a website that they can go to learn more about Semester at Sea?
Semesteratsea.org
That's
is
pretty
the
simple.
primary website, and that will give you information on all of our voyages, about the organization itself, which, is an organization that has been in existence since 1963 in this current iteration. And so we've been sailing for more than 60 years, with I think probably more than 70,000 alumni at this point. And it generations of people, and it's nice to be able to have interaction with people like that. I just went to an affair this week that was just a get together sponsored locally in Alexandria, and one of the women I met had sailed on the very first voyage in 1963.
Wow.
She is still active and considering sailing again. I mean,
Okay.
it's an amazing community.
And from what we've discussed here, I think for a parent who has a college age child, something to think about, a completely different, unique kind of an experience educationally. Or if you're the adult and you say, well, wait a minute, I have time on my hands and I want to try and do something different, it's also something for that person to consider. So it really doesn't matter.
Well, absolutely. In fact, a lot of the students will send pictures home to their parents from various ports, along with a sign that says, "Thanks for giving me the world." And several years ago, a number of us on the Lifelong Learner Council at that time created a similar sign that said, "And now it's your turn." And so students would put that up and encourage their parents to sail as lifelong learners.
Well, there you
And
go. It
many of
doesn't
them
really matter.
have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So
that's
it goes
great.
full circle. It goes
Yeah.
full circle. I mean, sometimes it's a parent who encourages their children, and sometimes it's a child who encourages the parent to try this opportunity.
Now, there's always so much to get out of travel, and there's always something we'll learn by traveling anywhere around the world. So I think it's a great program. I haven't tried it yet, but who knows? And we'll just keep sailing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
One way or
But
the other.
one way or the other, you have to. Well, it's not only sailing, it's learning. And the
Yeah.
one thing about Semester at Sea is it is just such an enriching experience. But the interaction with the students, the exposure to the global cultures, and then the technical disciplines of the classes that you take,
Yeah.
whether it's on the political systems of all these countries, the history of all these countries, and how they got to be where they are now, versus, arts and literature.
There
It's
you
just,
go.
it gives you a fuller picture. And a fuller picture than you get on independent travel, I think.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for the time today, and hopefully it will encourage a few people to look into it and see what they can do to take advantage of this great opportunity that exists. So thank you very much, Elaine.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thanks, and have a great day.
Thank you, friends, for listening to episode 15 of Tim's Travels. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, proud producer of the show on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. Today, we had a great conversation with Elaine Church from the Semester at Sea program. For more information, go to semesteratsea.com. And we look forward to bringing you more information about this fantastic program on Incandescent Kids magazine, incandescentkids.com. Again, I'm Hope Katz Gibbs. We'll see you next time on Tim's Travels.